We've been building this week's edition of Eastern Standard. I'm Tom Martin, and here's a preview.
This is a place that is sometimes been described as a poor place, but it's actually rich in culture and in creative expression.
Apple Shop's Herbie Smith with us on the 50th anniversary celebration of an organization that has married analysis and creativity.
Analysis and creativity can solve about any problem you face. And in fact, that's how we solve problems. And so we find that is alive and kicking right here in some of the most hard-pressed places in the eastern third of Kentucky.
Herbie Smith is joined by Willa Johnson, director of Apple Shop's Appalachian Media Institute, where the work of young, budding filmmakers can sometimes enlighten the whole country.
They made one of the first pieces in the nation to address the OxyContin epidemic.
And the cameras and recorders continue to roll in and around Whitesburg and the central Appalachian region.
To really show us like what it looks like to be a young person living in Appalachia today.
But that age-old challenge to rural Kentucky families and communities lingers. Will the region's young return after going off to get an education and learning more about the world?
It still is very much this idea that if you want to find success, if you want to find a future, then you have to go. But that leaves a lot of people who really love their home and love where they're at torn between whether or not they can find happiness and success here.
We turn to Louisville and pianist, composer, arranger Rachel Grimes on her folk opera, The Way Forth.
So many women's stories have been left behind. You know, they weren't written about to begin with. You know, they weren't critical to the story of the person writing the history or to the people in power. So they were left out of the narrative.
And we're joined by filmmaker Catherine Axley, who has taken the story to the screen to accompany its live performance by a chamber orchestra and singers.
For me as a filmmaker to encounter Rachel and to encounter this project was really unusual because I normally think of music in film as, you know, composing music for a finished film. But in this case, we were actually composing film for an almost completed musical work. So that framing of how to approach the film was completely different from anything I had done before.
The result?
You know, when you see a face, it's usually in the photograph. But when you see moving film, you see the landscapes, you see these hands, you see these gestures or these sort of everyday things that are happening. It's, you know, it's nothing profound. It's just normal activities. And it also kind of helps it be unclear, is this now or is this in the past?
And we wind up in Spearfish, South Dakota, where Black Hills State University historian Thomas Wyatt, working with the support of the Kentucky Historical Society, is looking into how the Cold War between the U.S. and the former Soviet Union influenced how America celebrates Christmas.
The tension between secular and sacred, which is really part of the modern Christmas interpretation, we see this in the Cold War because there's a promotion of commercial ideas, while at the same time a promotion of kind of quasi-religious ideas, all within this context of the conflict with the Soviet Union and presenting and promoting what it means to be American.
And, says Wyatt, that brings us to today.
There's this kind of cultural sense of what it means to be American is tied to consuming things. And so Christmas gets very much tied into that concept as well.
It's all on this week's edition of Eastern Standard, Thursday at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m., Sunday at 6 p.m. here on 88.9 and on our mobile app. For Eastern Standard and WEKU, I'm Tom Martin.